Blog Talk Radio.
Is like a mirror. They reflect what you give them. That's why.
Everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. So glad to have you along board tonight. We have got a very interesting show lined up for you tonight. We're going to talk about quite a few things going on in the news. Top story, of course, what's going on with Flight 370. A lot going on with that. But we're going to talk about some other things before we get to that story. But that song you just heard was like by Pitbull and Shakira, and it was titled Let's Get Started. Well, that has a lot to do with the story about Flight 370. Believe it or not, I'm going to tell you what the lyrics really say because it's got a really great beat to it. But the lyrics, the conspiracy theorists are saying, has a lot to do with the missing flight. So we're going to go into that as we cover that story later. But I thought I'd play it at the beginning because I love the beat. But when I went and looked at the lyrics, I was very shocked at what I found. Also, we're going to be talking about the fact that BP has had another oil spill, this time in Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan runs along Chicago. And so, you know, basically people are upset again because it's looking like it was maybe as many as 1,638 gallons that could have spilled over into Lake Michigan. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. We're also going to talk about Albuquerque riots. Basically, you know, about 500 people initially took to the streets out of concern that they killed a homeless man who was illegally camping up in the mountains. And I think, you know, probably nothing would have been said had this not been something the citizens of Albuquerque are considering happening too often. And I think they've had 37 police shootings since 2010, and 23 have been fatal. So that's what caused the Albuquerque riots, and that's what we're going to be talking about when we cover that story tonight. Also, we're going to talk about Miriam Carey. Maybe you all remember back in October of 2013 when she was the African-American lady that had her child in the car, and she was accused of taking her car and using it to ram the White House barricades. Well, the autopsy and toxicology report are back, and you're going to be very surprised at what they showed. Also, we're going to talk about the Fort Hood shooting. Christopher's running a little late tonight. He travels on Friday, but he's always a part of the show. So he actually is stationed at Fort Hood, and he's going to be a part of that story. So Christopher's going to give us some inside scoop as to what happened with the Fort Hood shooting. So we're going to get to that after Chris gets with us tonight. And also we're going to talk about the Venezuela situation where they're requiring you to give your fingerprints and other personal information in order to buy groceries. Y'all, is this the 666? I mean, that one jumped out at me as we were scanning newspapers this week to decide what stories we were going to cover. And that one jumped out at me. I thought, you know, the mark of the beast says that you're not going to be able to buy or sell unless you take the mark. And so that just seems to me like we're getting really close to what's to happen in the New World Order and all of that. But on board already tonight is Mr. A.J. Houston. He's in the building. Good evening, A.J. How you doing?
What's up, Kim? I'm doing all right, yourself?
You know what? I'm claiming a good Friday. It's been a very interesting week. I lost a friend this week. So heart is heavy, but, you know, I love Calvin White, and he definitely loved him some Carey, and so heart is heavy, but I know he's moved on to a better place. So besides that, I'm good. I am good.
Okay.
So tonight, you know, AJ, there's so much in the news. There's so much going on. And, you know, it's so funny that we decided to break up the show and start talking about hot topics every week because, you know, what we found out is, you know, we started out doing one hot topic, you know, for the whole two-hour segment because we would find the most interesting story to talk about for 2 hours. But now there's just so many stories, AJ.
Hey, you didn't say anything about the 170,000 gallons that was spent in the Gulf.
You know what? We can talk about that too. I mean, there's just so many. I have the hard decision of going through the stories and deciding which ones we can talk about and which ones we can't because of our time restraints. But absolutely, we can go there. I'm at a loss because doesn't it seem like there's more going on in our world now and that we're not even able to cover all the stories that we're interested in because it's just so many.
Well, I just think what happened is when we switched to streaming media and every show wants you to tweet live with the show, and I'm trying to figure out how can you watch the show and tweet at the same time.
Well, you know what? You know what? I'm going to tell you what. I've been hearing preachers say tweet that. And I'm thinking, do you really want them to try to listen to the message and tweet it too? So that is really a big thing now, which I think is inappropriate, but I see people doing it all the time. But I really, you know, I don't know. I don't tell anybody to tweet what's going on in the show. I mean, I hope that if they find the show interesting enough and they want to tell somebody about it, fine. But I don't tell them to stop listening to the show to go tweet it, but people do.
No, but I'm saying it's not that they stop listening to go tweet it. It's just the fact that they, you know, everybody thinks we can multitask.
Yeah.
And it's like people try to tweet and drive. They be in 2-3 lanes at the same time. Or, you know, all these other things. So I don't think that you're totally focused on what you're doing when you're actually trying to put your attention somewhere else. And I think that's what we've become so far. We will sit down and try and do a lot of things, and neither one of them do we do well.
I agree. I absolutely agree. No arguments here. I absolutely agree. You know, the thing is, what I'm finding out, though, is all of this news is scaring people. I mean, I've never seen people more tensed, you know, and I was telling somebody the other day that have you noticed that every time there's someone that gets hit by a vehicle now, you know, there's like a 50-50 chance that the person will hit and run. That never used to happen. And so I'm just wondering how tensed is our world based on all of these calamities that we're hearing about and wars and rumors of wars and, you know, economic, you know, collapses that we're hearing about. Are people really just panicking and they just don't know it? Are they freaking out and just don't know it?
Well, I think, you know, with everybody hitting people, go back to the conversation we were talking about at first. Everybody has Facebook in their car. They have, you know, you have all these things. You have your inboard dash can actually play videos. And you have all these distractions while you're driving.
Yeah.
So hitting somebody, and then they can check your phone logs, check your car logs to see if you were doing something else at the time. So you would definitely be at fault. So I think people are finding themselves at fault too much, and nobody wants to take, you know, take the blame for what they are, stand accountable for what they do. Basically.
I agree. Well, that's an excellent segue into our first story. Basically, lawmakers are calling for a full accountability from BP on that Lake Michigan oil spill. I mean, AJ, you know what? I don't know if BP ought to get a pass again. I mean, you know, what happened with the Gulf, you know, when that happened, you know, first of all, the people were outraged. And then all of a sudden, BP came in and started spending a whole lot of money down there. And then the next thing you know, they were doing commercials with the residents saying, this is the greatest thing that happened to us. You know, business has never been better. Everybody's working. And so, I don't know, it's almost like they took what really was a bad situation and they flipped it and start pimping the people. And so the people, I don't know, don't realize it long term. Maybe the side effects of that oil may not show up right away in their systems in terms of their health. But down the road, there's going to be some health problems that come from, you know, people that are in and around that water. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. But I'm saying they didn't start spending money first. What they did is they start cutting checks.
So what they did.
I said, I have a friend that lives down there. He said, that they were cutting checks to people that maybe called themselves fishermen that wasn't, you know, trying to make a living at fishing, you know, but wasn't really making it. So when BP came in and said, okay, if you're a fisherman and you would have caught this much fish a week and you would have sold this much at the market, so over the time that this ecologically gets better, you would have made this amount of money, so here's a check.
Thanks.
So people started trying to find what they were doing that was close to the water, but BP would cut them a check. And they was cutting people checks for just some of anything.
Thanks.
And then the least they did was just like, you know, I told you Steven Seagal had this movie where they did the oil spill in Alaska. It's by Jesus Oil or whatever it was. And and the guy that owned the company made this speech that sounded exactly like the speech that BP's president made. I'm saying I was listening and I was shocked because I'm like, that is the exact speech that was made in the movie Steven Seagal was in.
You know what I'm finding out, and I'm just going to put this out there, AJ, nothing seems to be real anymore. I mean, it's like, you know, when we watch the movies, we realize Hollywood is Hollywood in our real life, but everything kind of seems blended now. You know, I mean, everybody is over the top, you know, they're very animated with the way they look, the way they carry themselves, doing anything and everything to get attention or draw attention to themselves. Everybody's wanting to be the next, you know, you know, celebrity or whatever. And so it just seems like all of everything that was isn't anymore. What was real is fake. You know what I'm saying? What was high is low. What was low is high. Does that make any sense to you? It's just like everything is just blended.
No, it makes a lot of sense because I think what we've become, we become mimics of everybody, of whatever's happening. That's what trending to me is. Let's mimic what we say is trending. So if this is trending, if this attire is trending, if this thing is trending, you know, because I guess my major dilemma is I have a lot of writing friends that are on Facebook, all these different writing groups, and all these other people put me in groups that I don't even know how I got in the groups that are portrait groups and writing groups. But what I've noticed, you know, some people said, hey, man, I like your post, so, you know, post in my group. You know, I'm a major member of the group, and you can do this and that. And I started looking at the group. Now everybody's posting these little squares with these background pictures with somebody else's quote on them on their page. And you're supposed to be a writer, so I don't understand how you should get any likes for what somebody else wrote.
Nothing is real anymore. Everybody's just like, I don't know. It's just I think you have to watch. Seriously, I have to be very careful what I say because sometimes I'll just say stuff. But I'm just really paying attention. I ask anybody that's listening to pay attention to the world we're living in. It's as though if you really look close from the government down to just what's around you, what you thought was something that you should admire, if you really look at it closely, it's a mirage. I mean, it's sad to say, but you know, when I used to look at the White House, I thought that was the most, I don't know, unattainable thing in the world. But I realized that a lot of it is not what we think it is. It's just different. I don't know. It's just different. And so I think you'll have to investigate that for yourself because I ain't going to get myself in trouble. But anyway, that's just how it goes.
Okay, when you said from the government down, what that made me think about is if you hear – the Republicans are Democrats, but mainly Republicans. When they say, okay, when the birther movement was going on, everybody was saying the same thing. Regardless of what state they were from, where they were from, if you were a Republican, this is what you had to say in your speech somewhere. When Mitt was running, he had the same thing going on, that Mitt and everybody around him would say the same thing, even if it was a lie, they would say the same thing to try and make the lie the truth.
And see, that's exactly what I'm alluding to, is that we are buying into a false reality. You know, it's like they'll tell us anything on the evening news, and back in the day we didn't even know any better, so we believed them. But now if you learn to decipher or sift through what the news is telling you, you'll find it's only a fragment of the truth. I mean, only a fragment. I mean, and now I can, it took me a while because someone told me how to do it, but it took me a while to get it. Now I can sift through these stories very quickly and see, oh, my God, that doesn't make sense. You know, or did you catch that they said it this way or they said it that way? So you really have to pay attention because what we think is reality isn't even reality anymore. I mean, the stock market is artificially propped up. You know what I'm saying? So people are thinking, well, they're going in there with their hard-earned cash trying to, you know, invest in trying to plan for retirement when it's all a house of cards. I mean, it just is. And so it's just like if you have enough money, you can pay for anything. I think even the Bible says that money answers all things. And so, yeah, but I think the Bible even says that, and I think that's the world we're living in. It's like if you have enough money, you can create reality, and the rest of us are just living in fairyland. But people who have the money are the ones that are.
Before you move past that, don't you remember Eddie Murphy in the movie when they were trying to rig the market with pork bellies, trying to get the pork report?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying is they can make the stock market go up and down whenever they want to because you got one person on TV saying, oh, it's a bull market, oh, it's a bear market. Then everybody start moving their money where they want to move it to. And if you know what he said, what it means, I guess if you know the definition of what he's talking about, you can move your money around and make money.
Exactly. And people don't realize, you know, you got a set group of people up there who are inside on everything, so they're making all the money, and the rest of the people are just, it's a crapshoot. This is an absolute crapshoot. There's like a house of cards, and somebody eventually is going to snatch it down, and then there you are. It's just, we are off subject, but I need to put that out there tonight. It's just, I'm just seeing things. I think I took off the rose-colored glasses, and I began to look at life as it really is and not the way I really wanted it to be or hoped that it would be. And I think it saves you a lot of heartache. It really does. It saves you from living in the fairy tale land, hoping that, you know, and don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with faith because I got plenty of it, trust me. But at the same time, I think I realize that even with all my faith, there's still a bunch of crooks and gangsters out here that are running stuff. And those who have the most dollars are the ones who's doing it. And people like BP, you know, they created reality, you know, down there. All those people thought the reality was that the water was messed up and they were all going to probably get sick and die, but all BP had to do was start going down there in the Gulf and cutting checks, and all of a sudden people were happy again, and they didn't even care what was down the road. They were just living in today, which is crazy, which is crazy. But in Chicago, I don't know.
Down in Houston recently, they had that was just circling. That was supposed to, you know, because Houston is one of the biggest markets as far as transporting items by water.
Mm-hmm.
They had all these boats that were circling because they spilled 170,000 gallons of oil in the Gulf again. And the boats couldn't pass through it because they didn't want the boats dragging that up to the docks.
Mm-hmm.
So the boats were circling while they was trying to clean up the oil and clean up some areas so the boats could actually dock. And I hadn't heard anything else about the story, but I was like, this should be one of the major stories on the news market, but it's not.
See, I think what people don't know is big oil companies are running this thing. I mean, big banks are running this country. But in the area where I live in and AJ lives in, there's been a lot of drilling for gas in this area. And literally, my own property, I have gotten, AJ, the amount of checks that I've got for my royalties are a joke. If I tell you they've had the rights to drill on my property now for probably 6 years, and if I have collected $500 in royalties, I don't think I think it's just that. But I don't even think it's come to $500. I mean, this
hey,
is just
did,
how
they did the same out here. They came out here before they started drilling everywhere else. I live on the far south side of Fort Worth, right before you get to Crowley,
mm-hmm.
And they came out and they went to all the houses and signed this contract. And then they cut you this check, and they were saying, okay, almost like it was going to be monthly. At least they gave you this facade like they was going to be doing some things that would matter. And they're fracking in a lot of these areas, too. But nobody's getting a check for anything anymore. It's just like we were supposed to forget that they were going to pay us to drill on our property.
I got a check this week for $38. I did, for $38. And I'll tell you how bad it was. Because I'm going to do a story on this, and I'm just going to out them now because I'm a show coming. I am. I'm coming on this story. When they first came into this area, y'all, they were so crooked that they went to the hood first. And I'm calling it what it is. They went to the hood first and offered people $300 to drill on their properties. And they had preachers in this city who told their congregants this was a blessing from the Lord, and they all needed to sign up for $300, and black people flocked to church locations in the city to sign up for $300 to allow people to drill on their properties. And when they got to my area, I thought $300 sounded ridiculous, and I said, I'm just going to wait. Well, months and months later, I heard that some people were getting $1,500. So I thought, well, I'm one of the smart ones. So I thought, well, I'm getting five times what those people got, so I'm going to sign now. They gave me $1,500, and I thought I was in high cotton, only to find out later they moved to the high-dollar rent district in the city. And you know what they did? They gave those people $8,000 and better. Because those people were smart enough by then to get an attorney and pool their resources together to hire an attorney who represented them, and they got $8,000 as opposed to the people in the hood got $3,000. That's just the power of big oil companies. I mean, AJ, that, you know, when I lived that one. I absolutely lived that one. And I could not believe that the city did not do anything to protect the people, but they didn't. And they started in the hood first because they knew that the people were not going to read and they were not going to pay attention. But anyway, that's what it is. So anyway, I lived it, and eventually I will do a story on that. But there's a whole lot of people today, now 6 or 7 years later, still getting little small checks, if anything, if not, you know, maybe not even anything at all. And there's nobody to protect you. It's just saying like that. So that's what we're talking about. So in Chicago, I'm going to move on because y'all get me on my soapbox about what I got feed out of from Chesapeake Oil. But anyway, Chesapeake Oil and BP's and companies like that, AJ, they pay off whoever they have to pay off, and the rest is history. You just sucker punched, period. So it is what it is. But that's what the situation is in Chicago, right outside of Chicago. I think Chicago basically, I forgot how many people they said, that water supply is I mean, right there, Lake Michigan. I've lived in Chicago before. Lake Michigan is the water source for Chicago. There's, I don't know how many people in the city of Chicago, and I'm looking for my notes on that, but there's, I don't know how many people in the city of Chicago, and those people, that's their water source. And today, basically, BP is doing a song and dance about, oh, it may be 600, it may be 1,600. We don't know exactly. I think we got the mass majority of it. I think the fish are so deep in the water that they are not going to be affected. So, you know, everybody be happy. We're doing the best we can. That's basically what BP has said to them. And, you know, nobody's complaining. So, or I guess you shouldn't say anybody's complaining, but the lawmakers are not doing anything to make the situation any better. But AJ, let's talk about the situation with the Albuquerque. No. I want to move to this story. This story jumped out at me because I just saw it today and it really bothered me. Remember Marion Carey, the young lady back in October that they said was using her vehicle to ram the White House barricade? Remember her?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, the thing is, y'all, that story, in my opinion, never made sense. I mean, she had a young child in the car. I think her child was 1 year old or less. And it just made no sense what they said happened. But I think we had to accept what we had to accept in terms of that story. And so they said at first that, you know, they called her a terrorist. They said that she was a terrorist threat, you know, when it first happened, because that happened on October 3rd of 2013. Basically, you know, when she did it, they said that she was believing that Barack Obama was stalking her, and they said that she thought that she was a prophet from Stanford. Well, the terrorist threat turned out not to be the case because she didn't have a gun. And then they said, oh, she's on all of these drugs because she's got, what do they call it, after you've had a baby, post-traumatic? No, that's not post-traumatic. What do you call it when you've had a baby? And
postpartum depression.
What's it called?
Postpartum depression.
Exactly. They said she had postpartum depression and she was on all these drugs, and so that's what happened. And so it sounded good. And we all probably believe, like, okay, if she thought she was a prophet and she thought Barack Obama was stalking her, she probably was on some kind of drugs. Well, guess what? The toxicology report is back. The autopsy is back. And guess what? The toxicology report says she didn't have any drugs in her system. None whatsoever. I mean, illegal or prescribed. And it also says she was shot in the back of the head. I don't know where to go with that story because, I mean.
Because I remember seeing the footage of her because they were trying to stop her on the way through. She wouldn't stop. She ran the gate a couple of times, sped around, and people were chasing her trying to flag away. And she was actually driving, so I don't think they fixed that video to look like that. So I don't know what really happened. I just know what it looked like.
You know what I think about the video, or what I know about video? Because I saw it in the Kendrick Johnson situation. Video can be altered, or video can be stopped and started. So could we have seen a portion of the video and not all of the video? And I'm not sure why she did it. I'm not sure. But I know, I'm just saying,
I've done video editing and everything, so I know how video looks when it's edited. Even when you edit it smooth, you can see the cut, because it's hard to line the frames up together, because video comes 30 frames a second unless you're shooting HD. It's more. A film is less. But
the news shows you what they show you. News doesn't always show you a video from beginning to end. They'll show you the pieces they want you to see, right?
I know. Exactly.
And but, so would they have been a clip out of it?
Now, the initial clip I saw was a consistent flow. See, when video don't flow consistently, or you see it going one way and the other way, that's a cut. And, you know, it's easy to detect when video, except for when you have the nice graphics that you can add graphics like they do in the cartoon movies and the other movies now. Because you can have graphics to where all the sci-fi movies are made with a lot of graphics. Only some of them, you know, have a little sketch. But it's interesting because it's hard to believe what anybody tells you these days. Because me, I take everything that's in the news with a grain of salt. I just can't believe it. I'm like, okay, let me wait to the start. Just like the 370, we did the 370 when it first missing.
Yeah.
And he was saying,
we didn't believe it then, and we still don't believe it. I mean, Christopher, you want to weigh in on that? I mean,
100,000 miles from where they said it was at first.
Oh, and right. You know what? And it gets better, because we're going to play a clip off of a YouTube where a conspiracy theorist says what he believes happened. We have not investigated this. We're going to tell you going in. We have not. We just found it a very interesting video, and we're going to run it just because the young man has a lot of very interesting information. He did a lot of math to come up with his theory. He did a lot of, you all will see. We'll go there. Christopher. With Miriam Carey, did you believe that story?
Some of it, in reference to her driving, but not so much as I think what came out in the media in terms of why she may have been in terms of driving and trying to ram, you know, the walls and so forth. The one thing I do know is that even in the case, let's just say you have an individual mental illness and they're driving and they're driving erratically and so forth. If you really think about it, there were two different points in there that the police could have shot her tires out. I find anything like that suspicious. I know when we do riot control, when we do a lot of things, what we're actually trying to do is limit the violence or limit the damage that any one individual or group could do. And when the police officers had walked up to her car and made no attempt to shoot her tires out, but then later basically had to claim that they had to shoot at her or to shoot her to basically stop her, I have problems with the whole story. I mean, because there was no reason for her to be shot.
And I agree. So is it possible that there's more to the story that we have not heard?
Oh, yes. I definitely think it is. I mean, there's some things in terms of her child being in the back of the car and that she had actually driven down from another city. There's been no mention about what brought about her traveling down to D.C., how she got there, did she stop and gas up, you know, all those other various things. I mean, that seems to be lost. And if you're going to investigate the whole story, then you have to put all the information on the table. But they're given the more sensationalized pieces of it, but it's not the whole story.
I agree. And I think AJ said the tape was not stopped and started, but I think I beg to differ, because that tape never showed them taking the child off the car, but they did before they shot her.
I was just talking about the part of it to where they were trying to stop her when she was driving, because initially they tried to flag her down. She went around and she drove past the pole. She banged it a couple times, backed up and drove past the pole. That's what I was just talking about, that initial part. When they were talking about the fence and ramming the car, just that part.
Okay, because I know at some point they said the child was removed before the shooting, and so I don't ever recall seeing any video footage to show the child being removed.
And that doesn't make sense to me neither. I mean, that's kind of like segue. The O.J. Simpson case, when he was on that expressway after that entire chase from beginning to end with the news helicopters and the police helicopters, when they got back to his house, his friend got out of the vehicle. O.J. never got out of the vehicle. I don't think he was ever in the vehicle, but they claimed that he was. So I think this is another case of that, too. So and if you ever see that video on YouTube, you will never see O.J. in the vehicle, nor at the end, even after the police, his friend steps out of the vehicle and they open the doors, there's nobody in the back of the car.
Really? Okay, and I never paid. You know, the thing is, people do not know how creative. Hold on, I'm sorry. People do not know how creative news reporting can be. You know what I'm saying? They have the ability to sound. What do you call it? When you do voiceover a particular story, or it basically, if you're not trained to understand all of that, it just looks like whatever they're saying is what goes with the video footage and the whole nine yards. And I never, to be honest with you, I remember watching the Bronco chase, and I don't think I ever remembered noticing that OJ never got out of the car.
I wasn't in the car, kid. I wasn't in the car. I'm just saying. I wasn't in it. But see, my thing, I stopped watching it early because I had a problem with them calling a 35-mile-an-hour ride down the freeway at a high-speed chase.
And the police were not doing anything to cut him off or head him off. It was just like the slowest, I mean, you're right, chase ever. But okay. I thought it was me.
Well, but think about that, though. I mean, I know we're kind of off topic, but actually, that was supposed to be a spontaneous thing where he allegedly made a 911 call and said, "I'm thinking about committing suicide, but I'm going to leave my house and I'm going down the expressway." Now, his friend was driving the vehicle from start to finish. Then, if that was something spontaneous, how is it, and when you watch the video, on two different overpasses, people had professionally made up signs saying gold juice, gold juice. How would they have known he was coming down there if it was spontaneous, if it hadn't been prescripted? Where do you get professionally made signs up in a matter of 20 minutes?
I never caught that. And I remember seeing that, but
hey,
I never caught that.
Kinko's, man. Kinko's can do quick signs, man.
AJ, yeah, stop. And you know what? AJ and I were just talking about, Chris, before you got here, how nothing is real anymore. You know what I'm saying? Everything is edited and scripted and put out there, and what we think is reality is really basically like a reality show. Reality shows are scripted, y'all. I mean, that's not reality. The camera didn't just happen to be sitting there and they holding a conversation about something that they think you're going to be interested in. It's all, you know, it's scripted. And I think most of what we see today in our life is all pre-planned for us. That's just the road we're going down. But, y'all, we got to move on because we got some big stories. Chris is going to have to give us an update on this Ford Hood story. So we got to move on. Listen, Albuquerque. What happened in Albuquerque is scary, the riots down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. What happened, it seems like on March 31st, 2014, the people were protesting because the police had shot a homeless man. He was up in the mountains and he was camping out. And basically they said that James Boyd, a 38-year-old man who was homeless, was illegally sleeping in the mountain. And officers, just a little footnote here, officers had a previous problem with him where he had broken an officer's nose. So at this particular time, they're confronting him. He's alone in the mountains asleep, and the officers walk up on him with flashlights drawn saying, you got to get out of here. So I'm sure he was startled. I'm just going to give him that. I'm sure he was startled. And they said he had some mental issues. And so officers were kind of somewhat surrounding him, but they were about 20 feet from him. And basically they said he had a knife, and they told him to get down. And as he saw the dogs and officers moving close to him. They said he did not obey commands, and they ended up shooting him. My question is, was this really necessary? I mean, if a man is in the mountains asleep, even if it's illegally, if he's homeless, where else is he going to be? I mean, he's going to be out in the street somewhere, and he's homeless. So was this necessary?
No, I saw that video a couple different times. Again, I have a problem with authorities escalating the use of force when there's no need to. I don't know, in some cities and municipals, if the police are just skipping the police academy, if they're just telling them, you know, when you come into a situation, just use deadly force, make your day a lot quicker, because in this video, the guy, I don't care if he had a knife. The thing is that there were at least three police officers, two of which had their weapons drawn, one of which had a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle. So what I don't understand is that even if a person does not comply, but you have the upper hand, because it's not like they have a gun pointing back at you, you can wound them. But the intent in a lot of these situations is not to wound people. I mean, I think the mentality is, I'm going to kill them. And it's different if it's self-defense and it's like, you know, kill or be killed. But this, it didn't even have to go down that way. This should have been as simple, we need to extract this person, they're trespassing, and it should have been as simple as that. But unfortunately, I think they wanted to kill him.
Well, my thing is, as long as there's only one story, that's the only story that matters.
This is the problem I had. If you're up in the mountains and you're not illegally residing on somebody's private property, that's where I had a problem with the story. I really had a problem with, they were 20 feet from him, so when you say someone with a knife is posing a potential threat to you, if they're not moving towards you in an aggressive manner but they're standing still with their knife and you just woke them up and it's nighttime and you got flashlights in their faces, and you know they got mental illness, I just don't know that, you know, this is what I had a problem with too. They shot him with a real gun, and then they followed up with beanbag pellets or whatever they call those things to knock him to the ground. Well, shouldn't that have been the reverse? Shouldn't they have used the beanbag pellets to shoot him initially? And then if that did not work, then use, you know, the real bullets? I mean, that doesn't make sense.
That would only be if you didn't want to actually harm somebody in the first place. And again, it's kind of like that mentality that police actually, according to the law, don't really have to protect people. And even when you're protecting someone that, or trying to, that could be a threat, you should do it. And this is a case where it wasn't where they had to, I think, move so quickly or as rash as they did. Nobody's life was being threatened. The individual is not a danger to them. And that's what I'm saying. It goes back not just to the training, but it goes back to whatever department they happen to be in if they're presenting that. But kind of like what AJ said, they're presenting their story because ultimately they're going to justify their actions, and that's what they're doing. And it's irregardless of this poor individual that for whatever reason they determined to do what they did. But it's like AJ said, it's their story, it's their version, and pretty much it's going to hold up.
It was dangerous.
The problem
sleeping.
Is the people of Albuquerque.
He was dangerously sleeping, see.
He said what?
He was dangerously sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, literally, they could have crept up on him and handcuffed him. I mean, I'm just sorry. The problem that the... Say what? What'd you say, AJ?
Oh, I was just saying basically what AJ was saying. He was dangerously sleeping. I mean, and I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I mean, that was a travesty. And any time human life is injured or lost, that's serious, and we don't take it lightly. But, I mean, what I'm kind of having a problem with is... When the authorities have an issue, when people protest senseless violent acts, injuries, or deaths that result at the hands of the authorities, it's as though the authorities think that the people are just supposed to, and that's what I've always said. I mean, if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. So somehow they have twisted that and made it so that if a police officer does it, irregardless of what the same law that they're supposed to be upholding, they violate, it seems as though a lot of people, the citizenry, has accepted, oh, well, it's just the police, and the police are treated almost like with a rock star type of mentality, and even when they do wrong, they don't want to do anything to the police or to the sheriffs or to those authorities that do wrong, but then when I do the same thing, then they want to beat me with 11 stripes.
Oh, I agree. I think, but the people of Albuquerque, and I think it's very, very interesting the way they did this, because it's as though these people down there realize if we don't do something, we gonna be next. Since 2010, this department has had 37 police shootings. 23 have been fatal. So maybe the light bulb can go off for the rest of the country, but in Albuquerque, it already went off for the citizens down there. They was like, listen, they just picking us off down here. And so this is a city that only has 555,000 people, and you've got that many shootings. They had more shootings than New York. You know, so look at how many people are in New York and look at how many people are in Albuquerque. That says there's a big problem there. So the people in Albuquerque realize, listen, obviously this department is poorly trained. We got to do something. We got to make some noise, and they did. And the last I heard was the police chief was going to go and reexamine his policies and procedures because he realized that his officers were in trouble. At one point, they said the crowd of rioters had surrounded a police car, and they were trying to break out the police windows. That's when you're in trouble, when your people have turned on you. In a lot of cases, we feel like the police have turned on us with the way that they handle us and treat, you know, everything, like it's pretty much a police state. But it's a scary time when you think the citizens have turned on the officers. And so I think the police chief then realized he needed to do something. And I agree, and I commend him for realizing that maybe his department is the one that needed change. Would y'all agree with that?
Well, but yeah. When it takes that long for you to realize that there's a problem, it's not that you realize it. It's just like, oh, everybody else here has a problem, so I have to react before I lose my job.
Yeah, sometimes and it got national attention.
For you to hold on to your job, like, okay, I told them this was going to come eventually, so here it is.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think what happens, and I'm going to get off subject just a little bit. Back in the '70s in Memphis, there was a corrupt police officer there, and he was kind of terrorizing a bad neighborhood, actually. North Memphis has its challenges. And anyway, they decided one day that they were going to get that officer, and a particular group of people called the police because he normally would respond. And when the police came, it wasn't him. So they said, oh, forget about it. We okay. And then they waited a few minutes, and they called the police again. And then they got that particular officer to respond, and when he did, they tortured and killed him, and that was called the Shannon Street Massacre, because you know once the police tapped the house and found out that the officer was being tortured and they had eventually killed him, then they shot. Y'all can probably Google this, probably online sometime. They literally shot hundreds of rounds of bullets into that house. The next day, the newspaper showed the article or the picture of the house, and it was just riddled with bullets. But that's not what we want as a country. We don't want bad officers to cause situations like that. We want police chiefs to realize when they have bad officers and do something like what's happening in Albuquerque. That's just me. Don't y'all agree?
Well, I think they realize they do have bad officers, but I think they just Not honestly, because there's no way for you to have an officer that don't have all those complaints, because now it's easy to file a complaint on the badge number. You see the badge number, you see the car number, you file complaints. So if you got a couple of complaints, you have to go to class, you have to go to some anger management, you have to go somewhere. As residents, as citizens of this United States, when people have a problem with you, the court would send you to anger management. You have to finish those classes. And they will send you wherever it is because they feel like you are a detriment to your community.
Well, that's an excellent.
is true, and that is definitely good. And piggybacking on what AJ said, the other problems in most cities, I know it's a problem here in Chicago, is the agencies or the boards that actually convene when there's actually a informal complaint against a police officer. Part of the problem is that you have, and when you have internal review, and you have, like, in Chicago, the Illinois Independent, you get a review board. Part of the problem is that you have police officers who work in the department who are investigating other police officers. Now, you tell me, just logically, statistically, who do you think gonna really turn on somebody, even when they get evidence that the cop, the police officer, did wrong or he was involved in some kind of misconduct? Even when citizens are filing those complaints, and in Chicago, the board is so inept, they rarely ever do anything unless, like was said earlier, these folks in Albuquerque, they get national media attention. Now the chief wants to say, oh, well, maybe I better do something. Well, what was wrong with doing something when people started being killed and a lot of suspicious things came up and a lot of these complaints were filed? So I just like what AJ is saying. And unfortunately, until they get outside component as well to work with the mm-hmm. internal component, you can forget
mm-hmm.
it.
Oh, I agree. I 100% agree. And, you know, to segue into the Fort Hood situation, that young man had, from what we understand, some anger management issues. And the question is, were they addressed? We're talking about the situation that happened this week where they say authorities are saying that Specialist Ivan Lopez opened fire at Fort Hood, which is where Christopher Bunn's stationed. But authorities are investigating a deadly shooting in which they said, you know, that on Friday there was an altercation between Specialist Ivan Lopez and his fellow soldiers. And so whatever happened, which I'm understanding from the articles that I'm reading, he went to one of the administration buildings and requested a leave, the leave form, the to request time off. They call them a leave requester. What do they call that, AJ and Christopher? They call them request for leave off or leave time or?
Yes, it's a DA-31. It's a leave request form.
A leave request form. And he requested that in one of the administration buildings, and he was told to come back. And he said he left and then came back and opened fire on the two people that he had spoken with. And so they are not certain if this was just about that or if it was, you know, maybe an ongoing situation with these. However, it appears that the shooting some kind of way happened in a building that he worked. Maybe I'm going to let Christopher, because, you know, the newspaper says one thing, but Christopher's there and he's hearing. Christopher, what are you hearing happen?
Well, I kind of have to dance around that a little bit because it's
okay, let me finish filling in the blank. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Okay, let me fill
that's
in.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. First of all, Mr. Lopez is 34. He was married and he had a daughter. He was signed to the 13th Sustainment Command, which basically deals with logistics. He had done two deployments as an infantryman, including a four-month stay in Iraq back in 2011. What I understand, his medical history indicated that he was unstable, and he had psychiatric and psychological condition. That we know, basically. And so, like I said, they said he walked into the administration building on the base and opened fire with a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol just minutes after he had previously requested the leave form and was told to come back. They said after he shot in that administration building, he then got in his car, fired from his vehicle, and then they said he got out of the car, walked into another nearby administration building, and fired again. One of the buildings was a medical brigade, and the other one was a transportation battalion. Basically, they're saying that, you know, they're unsure if he targeted these particular soldiers or not. But they say he has a history of depression, anxiety, and other psychiatric disorders. And then they said Lopez had reported that he had suffered a traumatic brain injury. So whether or not that was true or not. But I think the thing that I found really sad was they said his wife was at home watching the news, and she was wondering where was he at. She hadn't heard from him since earlier in the afternoon, and was wondering, as she was watching the news, was it, you know, was he okay? And then later she heard them say the name of the deceased gunman, and that's when she realized it was her husband. So that's what I know about this particular story. But, Christopher, is there anything you can add to this story?
The one thing I can add in a general sense, there's been questions that have come up in terms of suicides in the military, the increasing rate, also the increasing rate of post-Vietnam soldiers all the way up to the present time with post-traumatic stress disorder and a lot, just basically psychiatric behavioral disturbances. And it is on the increase. And some of that is due to that the Vietnam War, the Korean War, and so forth, there wasn't really a really good identified type of what's called a demobilize, and when they come off, when they come from back from a deployment, and there's a better in place screening tool for when soldiers are getting ready to go overseas. They go through a what's called a post health deployment assessment, and then when they come back, they do a like assessment as well. But there's a lot of implementation in terms of medical, psychiatric care, evaluation. There's questionnaires. There's significant training dealing with suicide prevention, dealing with noticing or being able to identify signs, symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and so forth. So there's a litany. It's not perfect, but there are more safety measures that have been put in place to try and provide service members the care that they need should they have significant mental or psychological problems. And in this case, I mean, it's still under investigation. And, yes, in 2009 there was a shooting as well at Fort Hood, and a lot of people asking questions about, well, I thought military installations are safe and this and that. Because I think some people who have never been on military installations don't understand that just because you're a soldier, not all the soldiers are walking around on posts with sidearms and with rifles that are loaded and so forth. That's usually the military police or the civilian in conjunction with the civil service police that are on post as well, too. So, I mean, it's very tragic. It's still under investigation, and I'm sure at some point the Department of Defense, Department of the Army will make some kind of statement and be able to provide some more information. I didn't even know that it had happened. I wasn't at Fort Hood, but when I saw what you had sent, I was like, wow, because I was in some meetings and so forth and hadn't yet heard about it. But it is tragic. It's very tragic.
I was concerned about Christopher when I heard the news and knowing he stated out there. I texted him. I was like, are you okay? You know, I didn't even know at that time that the guy had actually entered one of the medical buildings, which Christopher was in the medical area of somewhere on Fort Hood. And I was thinking, oh, my God, this really ain't good. But I didn't even know initially that he had gone to one of the medical facilities out there. It's just tragic. AJ Houston, you want to weigh in on the Fort Hood story? Did we lose AJ?
Yeah, well, I think y'all covered the beast of it, or the best of it, whichever way you want to say it. But I think it's tragic because, you know, my daughter served, she's a captain in the military. She has PTSD. And then it retired her. It retired her in the middle of last year. And
really?
You know, she thought she was going to have a career in the military.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, that's another thing. PTSD has not really been recognized, you know, as it should be by the military as an issue. And I think all of these suicides kind of speak to there's a problem. And I'm just wondering, at what point does the military step up and take care of his own and say, listen, these guys are coming back damaged, and they need our help. That's what I'm wondering. I mean, I don't know what the procedure is for someone who's diagnosed with PTSD, but I don't think as of today there's a way that you could militarily retire out on that disorder. Am I incorrect, Christopher?
Well, it's kind of twofold. I mean, if you're regular Army or if you're AGR active in the Reserve or the National Guard, and they have measures where, first of all, if your command, whether you are a weekend warrior or you're full-time active duty, if your command notices that you have certain symptoms or you're having certain issues, they can do what's called a command-directed fitness for duty evaluation. That's where the government will put you on orders. They will send you to a military facility or to a civilian provider for evaluation, or a service member can self-refer themselves as well. There's free services out here for that so that they can be evaluated. Most that is connected with service-connected, like if you're coming back from a tour and you're a weekend warrior that was called on the active duty to deploy, no, whether you are a TPU or an active duty, you can be medically retired. But what has happened, unfortunately, in the past is that because backlog at the VA and before PTSD and depression as a diagnosis in the military was really identified and accepted, a lot of service members did fall through the crack. But even those individuals that are out there now, they can go to a vet center, they can go to other resources, have their issues, documented, identified, and then they can receive help. And so it's just important that they know the resources or the outlets that they need to go or to go to their local VA and so forth. It is better. It is not perfect. But from what I have seen and the service members that I deal with that have new onsets or initial onsets of PTSD or depression, I'm very versed in how to get them care and not to belabor the care. So, there's different ways to go about trying to get the treatment that you need.
Wonderful. If you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Riding Shotgun is Christopher Bonds and A.J. Houston. And we're talking about basically the lead story tonight is going to be the disappearance of Flight 370. But we're also covering some other hot topics in the news. We're talking about Albuquerque riots and what happened with that and how that caused the police chief down there to reexamine his policies and procedures, and we definitely commend him for that. Also, we talked about the autopsy report for the woman who was accused of the Capitol. I don't know if you want to call it. She was accused of ramming her vehicle, using her vehicle as a weapon to ram it against the White House barricades. Miriam Carey, her autopsy and toxicology report have come back, and they say that she was not on any psychotropic drugs, and they also said that she was actually shot in the back of the head. So that is the autopsy and toxicology report for Miriam Carey. Just coming in, a black female shot October 3rd in Washington, D.C. They said that she was basically hearing voices that were telling her that Barack Obama was stalking her, and she also felt like she was a prophet. That's what they said, allegedly. And also we're talking about the fact that BP had another oil spill in Chicago. So those are some of the stories that we've caught up on so far. And now we're talking about the Fort Hood story. But we're going to go to the phone lines for a second. We're going to go to area code 407-888. Good evening, your center stage.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Nathan in Orlando. I don't know where you're at in your conversation on your subjects, but I just scanning through looking for something, and I saw the heading to your show on Flight 370. I got a question I haven't heard anybody talk about.
Okay.
There is a, if you type in, go to Google Earth, type in Diego Garcia.
Okay.
Okay, what you will find is in the Indian Ocean, in the area where they said in the press conference from Malaysia a few weeks ago is where this plane was down. Here's a question I've been contacting the talking heads in the media, and I can't get anybody to respond back to me. How could a plane, I don't care if it was disconnected from the airlines, okay, how did a plane get in that area without the radars picking it up? And when you look at the runway on this island, you have to ask, could that, well, I know it could, but a 777 could land there. Another thing I'm hearing, too, in this mess, nobody could ring the phones. Somebody removed the batteries and from those phones so nobody could detect the people and where they're at on that plane.
You mean the cell phone batteries were removed from the passengers' phones?
Well, no, what I'm saying is they can find out where we're at. And they can track us unless you disconnect your battery from your phone.
Really?
Listen, if you've got your phone... Right now, if you have your phone, they know where you're at. You can disconnect it, drive across town, and they've lost you until you put your battery back in. They have not been able to, they would have been able to track these people that were on the plane. Guess what? Everybody gets on a plane with a cell phone these days.
Yeah, okay? I agree.
These
I agree.
Are questions that have not been addressed. And there's a guy, I got a response from him. There's a retired colonel from an organization in Washington, D.C. that I've seen him commentating on this. I've contacted his office, his aide sent a response, and this was more than a week ago. She acknowledged my request and said that he would be back. I've called and asked to speak with him. All I get is a recording. I called it, and I've tried to talk with the owner of the company. And no response, just a mail. A message machine.
We were going to run a different video, but I do see something on YouTube about that story that you just mentioned. And so you said that this Diego Garcia is what is it again?
It is a military base. Let me give you something else. Two Mondays ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same Monday we heard that press conference.
Mm-hmm.
George Norrie had, Jesse Ventura on his show because he's promoting a book he just wrote. I called in and asked, I told him I don't have a political part, a question, but I have something, and I told him what the question was. And he let me on, and I asked him why would not have radar have picked up these planes, and I asked him, did he know about Diego Garcia, and Governor Ventura started laughing, and the reason he's laughing is when they built that, he was there in 1971 when they built that base, and he was there helping them build the runway. And then he said a few little things that didn't matter, but didn't answer my question about the radar. I don't know if he was just ignoring it or, you know, we all have something else on our mind and don't really hear the question. My question is, why did any plane get anywhere in that area and not get picked up by radar? And if it did, why are we not hearing about it? These
I'm sorry. First of all, be clear about what is Diego Garcia?
Diego Garcia is a military base.
Okay. And where is it located?
Go type in the Indian River. Go to Google Earth, you know, the mm-hmm. little satellite thing, so you know that you go and look down at your house.
Right.
Type in Diego, D-I-E-G-O-G-A-R-C-I-A, Diego Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see an island in the Indian River, the Indian Ocean, in the same area the guy in the press conference from Malaysia said that the plane went down, which if the plane would have hit the water, submarines and ships' radar would have picked it up. So, you know, there's something not right about this.
Well, AJ Christopher, y'all want to address the caller?
Well, he brought some information I wasn't familiar with, but I would definitely check it out. But my understanding of the matter was, I kind of agree that somewhere around any military base, because I used to do radars, my first MOS in the Army, I was dealing with radars and missile systems. So every airplane has an ADL that emits from the plane so you can identify that plane. So planes flying in unrestricted or restricted airspace will be detected once they enter that particular space. And if there's a military base there, there's no way a plane could fly anywhere close to it that it wouldn't be detected whether it was flying low or high. So that is a good question, but I don't know anything about what you're saying, but I just know that part of the information. But I would definitely check it
all
out.
All you got to do, and most people have Google Earth on there. You know what I'm talking about, Google Earth, the satellite site.
I'm going to go check it out. I understand everything you're saying.
Look at it, and then and just got to ask. All you can say when you see this is, huh?
Hmm. Christopher, what your thoughts?
Well, you know, he is. I mean, that is a fact. I mean, I didn't know specifically about that particular installation, but they said that the installation was, I think it's partly owned, or there's some joint effort with Britain, but there is a base there, and I'll put to you like this. The U.S. backed and owned bases are pretty much identified, and we pretty much all know about them. But there are some joint operation locations and bases that are not probably known by the average people. And that base does lie within where they're saying in the Indian Ocean, where that plane, the flight pattern would have been prior to it being alleged going down.
Hmm. Wow. The video that I see on YouTube, and I think this is the one that he's referring to, it says flight MH370 is at Diego Garcia. Here's the proof. And that was posted about a week ago, and it has like 424,000 views already, almost 425,000.
What was the name of this site?
On YouTube?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, no, you said you just typed in something and came up with about...
I'm looking on YouTube, and I see a video on here that basically says flight 370 at Diego Garcia. Here's the proof. And there's a video on YouTube about that. So maybe there's some other people that think along the same lines as you do.
I don't know what I'm thinking. This is what I do know. This is what I do know. I haven't heard anything about any plane. They're saying, first of all, this is what's goofy about this, man. Well, we believe it's over here, so we're going to move all of our planes and ships over to this area. Well, we believe it's over here. And then as soon as this thing happened, China, which the majority of these people were on this plane were Chinese, they yelled out, "We've seen some debris over in this area," and it was nowhere near where it went. And then the guy from Malaysia is saying, "Well, it crashed in this area of the Indian Sea, but we don't have any debris yet, and we don't have any evidence. But we just, you know, they're making
point.
Stuff up. There's just too many holes and too many of these there's too many inconsistencies. I just know this much: if a mosquito gets anywhere near a radar detected area, it's going to get picked up. Okay, and this plane, this 777, did not fly anywhere near the Indian River, the Indian Ocean, and not get picked up by the radar. And that plane, that aircraft landing strip there is long enough to land anything that we know that gets in the air.
Wow.
Hey, you know what, Terry? Let me,
yes.
To kind of maybe emphasize what the caller just said. Now, I didn't notice. This says that Diego Garcia also acts as an emergency landing site for extended-range twin-engine operations commercial aircraft. It says that commercial aircraft that are cleared to fly long, landless distances over the Indian Ocean.
Hmm. Where'd you find that? What's that? Where's that at?
This is on the website. It's called thestar.com.
Well, we can listen to this video. I mean, if this young man is correct, there's a video on YouTube. It looks like it was put up about a week ago. It has like 424,800 views already. And it's about 7 minutes and 55 seconds. And this young man who's doing this video says that flight 370 is at Diego Garcia, and here is the proof. Do we want to listen to this guy?
Yeah, okay, yes, no. Let's do it.
Is that a yes? Is that
yes.
A yes? Okay.
Affirmative.
Because well, the caller was so interesting. Maybe he knows something we don't know. Let's try this. Well, let me see here. Let me line it up. I mean, the caller's giving me information I hadn't heard about. Let me see if we can line this video up and see if maybe the caller has some information that we don't know. Here we go.
Try to prove to you that plane landed in Diego Garcia on the early morning of March 8th of 2014. Now, I have done an extensive video on the I'm Your Ghost channel. I'm going to leave a link so you can see it all done, you know, with all the screen caps and all that stuff, okay? But I'm going to explain to you how it all worked out. And these are based on facts, not conjecture, all right? First of all, the flight itself took off from Malaysia at 12:41 a.m. Now, the last point of contact was on the 8th at 1:21 a.m. That's a 40-minute difference from the time it took off till the time of last point of contact. Now, people in the Maldives stated that they saw that plane flying very low, headed towards the southern tip of the Maldives. If you were to take a flight from Malaysia to the Maldives, it's 4 hours and 24 minutes. All right? The plane was seen in the Maldives at 6:15 a.m. So let's do some math. From 1:21 a.m. to the point of the last contact, if you add 4 hours and 24 minutes, that brings you to 5:45 a.m. But you see, you have to add 40 minutes to that because they were 40 minutes out from the point of which they took off until the last known point of contact, which will bring you to 6:25 a.m. We are talking a 10-minute difference. You got that? Okay, now let's go with the mileage. The mileage to get from Malaysia to China is 2,628 miles. The mileage from Malaysia to the Maldives to Diego Garcia is 2,617 miles. Now that's 11-mile difference. So they had plenty of fuel to make it to Diego Garcia. Now, sorry about holding the camera here. My tripod is not available at this time, but here's the deal. The reason why it was emitting signals is because it has some sort of mechanism in the engines that was sending relays to the satellites. Now, they had to have electricity to, you know, steer the plane to Diego Garcia. Now, Diego Garcia is a United States top secret military base that is leased from the UK, all right? So when it landed and then, you know, no more signals of that sort of thing, how did that happen? Well, you see, I believe that plane is being stored in a hangar that basically is, let's see, like a Faraday cage, if you will. Now, for the people that have cell phones and such, I'm going to prove my point here. If you lose your cell phone anywhere in the world and it has a GPS chip in it, it can be located via satellite, all right? Now, if you were to put that cell phone in a Faraday cage type scenario, the emissions coming from the GPS of going out, the signals going out, there would be no signals going out, and there would be no signals coming in, okay? Nothing could be sent, nothing could be received. For example, if you take any cell phone and you were to crumple up a piece of tinfoil and gently uncrumple it, and then wrap your cell phone up like a hot dog, you can call it all day long, but it's not going to ring. It will not. The person calling you can leave a message, and when you take it out of the temporary Faraday cage, if you will, you're going to get a missed call either instantaneously or maybe an hour or 24 hours later, and you'll be able to pick up that call. But while it's in there, you can't receive any calls, and you can't make any calls because now the signaling has been temporarily, interrupted by that mechanism. Now, a lot of people are suggesting that, the plane was, it landed in Pakistan and all that nonsense. No, I'm not buying that. The reason why is when a plane is going to land at any given airport anywhere in the world, it has to have clearance to land from the tower. So that country would know that that plane was to land, and of course the cat would be out of the bag. The only way for this to, let's say, where a plane could disappear and not a trace, is if it landed on a military installation somewhere in the world, and this way, being in the Indian Ocean at Diego Garcia, nobody is getting close to that place. No way. That facility is as top secret as Area 51, except it's located in the Indian Ocean. Now, for people to suggest that, Americans, they wouldn't, harm anyone. They wouldn't do anything naughty to all those innocent people. Yes, they would. Because, you see, in the late 60s, early 70s, the United Kingdom booted out over 2,000 people that lived on that nation, and they dropped them off in India with no way for them to take care of themselves or anything. They just said, you know what? We're going to pick you up from this island, and we're going to deport you out of your own country. The United States leases Diego Garcia from England. That is a fact, all right? Now, I'm going to give you a prediction, all right? But I'm stating as a statement that that plane landed at Diego Garcia, all right? But this is the part that's my opinion. It is my opinion that that plane will be at a later date relaunched and reflown into the air and then slammed back into the ocean, and everybody will have a big hoo-hoo dance and say, we must have missed it and we found it and all this stuff, but guess what? You're not going to find any passengers. I don't believe that you will. And the reason why is because they will use this time that has gone by to state that's why you're not going to find any passengers. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, again, if you want to see the video on the I'm Your Ghost channel, I'm going to leave you a link so you can see it down to the last detail. I'm Monographed, and if you can't speak freely, you are simply not free. Have a good one.
Okay, y'all. That was a person by the name of Montagraph, who has his own YouTube channel, and that's his theory. What do y'all think? That blew my mind.
Well, I think anytime you add something new, but see, it being a top-secret base, it leaves, just that in itself, bringing up a base that you didn't know existed in an area where they say the plane could have went down, and there's no way, like I was telling you earlier, every plane emits an ADL signal, and the ADL tells you what type of plane, what plane it is, and if it's authorized to be in an airspace, because military bases will shoot a plane down that's not authorized to be in the airspace, first off. So if they can find debris, I'd have to check into it more, because, when you get new information, you can't just conclude on the instant that, yeah, that's what happened. So I'm definitely going to take it in advisement.
Yes. Christopher, what do you think? That blew me away.
Well, I have to echo that. I mean, that is some information that does make you think about, what could be or how things could have happened. But like AJ's saying, I mean, all the information has to be put on the table, whether it's a fact or whether conjecture or conspiracy, because you kind of have to sift through it. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what does happen in the future. But I'll put it to you this way. When they find the plane in the future, it won't be because they just found it.
And y'all, I was absolutely going to run another video, and it definitely wasn't as interesting as that one. And the person did some math, and they came up with where they thought the plane was, but it's not nearly as interesting as that one. I don't know. I mean, the young man called in, and wow. I don't know. The thing is, you know, the show tonight was about, or the headlining show tonight was, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories surrounding, you know, the disappearance of Flight 370. So I guess we did, because that one is probably the most interesting one I've heard. I've heard of aliens. I heard of, you name it, it's a conspiracy theory about it out there, about this particular flight. But that is just, I don't have an opinion. I absolutely don't have an opinion. My question would be, why this flight, and, you know, why would our country be involved? You know, that's where I'm at loss to that young man.
Well, Karen, if you remember the information you sent out before, you had all these different important people that created ships and created all these other things. So you have to understand, there was a plane that crashed. It didn't have a black box. That had a person, a most important person that was in the cabinet of President Clinton, that we never knew what happened. So a lot of people can be innocent bystanders, just like they call it collateral damage. When you need to get one person or two people, and you got 1,000 people around him, then there's an earthquake that killed 1,000-some people.
And, you know, and people a lot of times, and Christopher flies weekly, you really have to be prayerful. I mean, you can't just, you know, no matter what your schedule says, you need to say before you board a plane, a train, a bus, Lord, is this the bus, a train, a plane I'm supposed to be getting? No, you agree with that, Christopher?
Yes, I do. And I had a discussion with a gentleman on one of the flights going to Fort Hood, who basically, you know, you're saying, you know, I'm an atheist and yada, yada. I said, well, that may be. I said, but I can bet you that you got faith. And he was like, well, what are you talking about? I said, do you know that pilot? Do you know the navigator up front? He was like, no. I said, do you know if they own something? Well, no. I said, so, but do you even know if their credentials are up to date? No. Well, you got faith there because you trust that you're getting on this plane and you're going. So, but, I mean, you do have to be careful because we live in such a time. I mean, you know, you have the TSA folks who checking people, but you don't know if people are on the tape. You don't know if somebody's allowing something to be slipped in to put something on the plane or to do something nefarious. You never know. So I know I do. I pray and just ask the Lord to keep me safe, and if something should happen that's supposed to happen, then let it be. But I am prayerful, but I'm also hyper-vigilant. I keep my eyes open because, you know, I believe in measuring twice and cutting once, so I'm sleeping with one eye open and one eye closed.
But you don't do the American prayer, do you? Christopher, you don't do the American prayer, do you?
How'd it go?
It's God, I need you to bless me and me.
I mean, God bless you and what? Okay, you're in and out. Repeat that one more time.
I say, like America, you know, God bless America and like America only. So
okay,
when you pray,
yeah,
you me and
yeah,
only.
Yeah.
No, I get that long ghetto prayer. No.
Come up 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
Listen, that's not, I mean, because there's so much to pray for today. I mean, really, I just wonder, you know, when those people boarded those planes, you know, you just so – we have so many routines that we just do and we don't think anymore. And I just wonder, did anybody get a inkling maybe this doesn't feel right? Because God always – you know, one of the my favorite scriptures in the Bible is warning counsel for destruction. And I just believe God had to have given somebody a warning not to board that plane. And I just wonder, you know, I don't know, maybe somebody didn't board, who knows. Huh?
Honestly, I think the people that boarded that plane were the people who were supposed to board it. I don't think it was, I mean, seemingly, just my gut feeling is that the people that got on that plane, it was exclusively made for. So now they're telling us there were 272 or whatever the case is, but that's just what they're telling us. I mean, I haven't seen a physical manifest with those many names on it. That's what we're being told. And then people in their mind, their psyche, they have accepted that because they've been told that. So they don't, some people at this point, even with all the airs of suspicion, some people don't have any reason to question because they're not going to do any more than what they hear.
This is true. Now, this is true. And, you know, and I agree with that. And you know, and the thing is, some people are just afraid to even think that anything bad could have happened on purpose. And I can feel that because, you know, it's a scary thought. You know, but I played a song at the beginning of the show, which makes you wonder again, because, again, this show is all about conspiracies surrounding this particular flight. The rapper, the white rapper, I think he's out of Canada, named Pitbull. I think he's out of Canada. Did a song called Get It Started with Shakira. Now, this is the thing. I want you all to follow with me as I tell you what the lyrics said. Now, this blew my mind. Maybe it will blow yours. Maybe it won't. Now, this song was released in 2012, and people are starting to speculate that this song had something to do with Flight 370. And basically, Pitbull starts the song, and he said, to these rappers, I apologize. I know it ain't fair. Only ball I drop, New Year's Times Square. The world is mine. Let me get this right. The world is mine. Sixth sense, S-I-X-T-H. I see the seventh sense. No, baby, let's get started for life. And then he goes on, and then there's the hook in there where Shakira is basically saying, every time I look in your eyes, I feel like I could stare in them for a lifetime. We can get started for life tonight. We can get started tonight for life tonight. And basically she goes on to say, we can get started for life tonight, for life tonight, for life tonight. We can get started. But then this is where it gets crazy. Pitbull's next verse says, big news, Pitbull, Tom Cruise, Mumbai. A lit up their December night like the 4th of July, vanilla sky. Thriller in Manila, knocking them out like Pacquillo. No Ali, no Frazier, but for now it's off to Malaysia. Two passports, three cities, two countries, one day. Now, that's worldwide. If you think it's a game, let's play. And then he says Dale. I'm not sure who Dale is. And then it goes back into the hook again. Are those lyrics strange to you? Hey, Jay.
How does
he talk about the
So what? I said it's unique lyrics. It is unique lyrics. And why does he mention it? I mean, I'm going to go back over this verse one more time because it threw me. And conspiracy theorists are saying it's connected. It says, big news, Pitbull, Tom Cruise, Mumbai, a lit up their December night like the 4th of July, vanilla sky. Thriller in Manila, knocking them out like Pacquillo. No Ali, no Frazier, but for now it's off to Malaysia, 2 passports, 3 cities, 2 countries, 1 day. Now, that's worldwide. If you think it's a game, let's play Dale. I don't know, y'all.
I'm gonna tell you, I don't really detect anything strange with it, because I'm saying I like some Pitbull tracks, but I listen to the lyrics, and maybe it's just me, but I see what he was trying to say in the little group that you just read a couple of times.
Okay.
Because, you know, Vanilla Sky was this movie Tom Cruise in there. It was just, you had to be on acid to watch it.
Okay.
It was just that strange.
Okay. You know, kind of like a Boeing 777 just disappearing into the air. Kind of strange. Okay. I'm just saying, go ahead.
But go watch Vanilla Sky. It is a strange movie.
Okay.
Definitely strange. Now, as far as Malaysia, you know, Pitbull, to me, I think rappers are chosen.
Mm.
You know, when you stay in a game long enough, you're a rapper, you'll be chosen. You get your 2 years, in a movie deal, whether you go out there, it is up to you. If you remember T.I. got a cake movie, a couple of movies, you get their awards for that 1 year, the next year they're still on top, then they get the movie deals, then they move on, then they choose the next.
Mm.
You do all the talk shows, do this. And Pitbull's trend was last year and this year because, you know, he was, you know, Super Bowl, he ran a lot of commercials all this other time. Pitbull is on all these things, you know, on about Pepsi and Bing and Google and all these other places. So, you know, I can see how he would just write whatever's needed. And I don't really think there's any direct context to anything except for somebody just trying to write something that...
But, I mean, when you... And for someone who writes Larry Shaw, First of all, you make sense of Malaysia, make sense of the 2 passports, make sense of the 2 countries. And I can understand somebody's flying and, you know, but who flies with 2 passports?
Well, 2 passports meant he was taking somebody, he didn't want nobody to know.
Hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, AJ, he's really hitting the nail on the head tonight. You got to keep something in mind, too, when you mention rappers, when you mention people who become very wealthy, affluent with the in crowd.
Mm.
There's a lot of things, once they let you in, you may Ooh. Not have known, but essentially, it's like you in and you don't get out because they're bringing you over to a different horizon with the access to information and other things you probably didn't even know existed. And once that happens, you kind of get carte blanche with certain things that other people, they just don't know about. I mean, it's like, how can somebody just, you know, go into an airport to a certain door and they end up on this plane and they're flying here and they don't have to go through the other regular routine that everybody else does. You're not the president. You're not a congressman. You're not anything like that. But once you're in that club, whether you're sworn in or however they do it, but some people have carte blanche, and some things that we would probably never imagine, they take it for granted because they do that all the time.
And you know what? To piggyback off of that, on 9/11, there were people that were told not to fly into New York. There were people who were told who worked at the World Trade Center not to go to work that day, just putting that out there. But one thing I know from having Lindsay Williams as a friend is that he said many times on this show that the elitists have a peculiar way of wanting to tell you ahead of time what they're going to do, but at the same time they know the masters won't even catch it. So it's just like those people that are awake, I suggest everybody wake up, but those people that are awake are those people that are paying close attention at the time they get it. And so they often use Hollywood and music as their stage to tell you what they're about to do in advance of doing it. They use movies. You know, they use music. And so I agree. Pitbull is reached that status where, you know, maybe he is in the circle and the clique. So if what Lindsay Williams says is true about the elitist will tell you in advance, maybe they gave the information to Pitbull, he put it in the song. Who knows? But I think, again, we're talking about conspiracy theories tonight. So anything is possible. But that's just another one of the conspiracy theories that's circulating. Like, you know, why is Pitbull talking about Malaysia? Why is he talking about two passports? Why is he talking about two countries in this song? You know, that's just some of what people are asking. And I don't know. I don't proclaim to know it all, but, you know, there's some other things, you know, surrounding this particular story. You know, there's been some speculation that some very important engineers were on the plane, and there were some patents that were pending. And allegedly, if there were five people, allegedly, who held this patent, four of them were on board that plane. When they perished, the patent was not approved. So the way that the contract was written at the time of, or I don't know if it's the way a patent is written or the way the contract was written, but however it be, it was stated that pending the patent's approval, the only people that could profit or get a cut if anything happened would be the, how does that go? Let me get this right. The patent was held by five people, and at the time that the plane went missing, the patent was not approved. So basically, if you perished, if you were one of the people who held the patent and you perished, then your heirs would not be in line to receive anything because the patent had not yet been received. However, four of the patent holders were on that plane, and when it perished, that meant all of their heirs would not profit one penny from their interest in the patent. However, the sole survivor of the patent would receive 100%, and the patent did clear 3 or 4 days after the plane disappeared. That's just something they got out there, y'all.
Okay, my thing is, see, something like that, see, I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Are you?
But I'm an optimist.
Okay.
So when it comes to the pit bull there, see, my thing is, you don't, Socrates can't teach Plato anything that he don't know himself. So for somebody to come up with this genius idea out of nowhere, I kind of debunk those kind of things that pop up. But that particular item, just like the patent and whatever the item is, there was another person on the plane that had some type of chip. I don't know what the chip was, but in this computer age, that chip could be worth more than they would deem all the people's lives on that plane.
Mm.
So I'm saying there's some things that happen in the process that you don't, you know, because the patent might matter, but it might not be as much as this particular chip because, you know, if you look at, this is not part of the story, but AT&T. AT&T had this big plant in Dallas, had all these workers. Their stock was splitting like every 6 months because I know my sister and them had thousands and thousands of shares of AT&T stock. They've been there 20-something years. AT&T sold out to Lucent Technologies. AT&T is the only company I know that transferred the stock that these people own in that company from AT&T stock to Lucent Technologies stock and moved AT&T down in Matamoros, Texas, almost in Mexico. And that stock dropped to almost $7 a share. They lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But AT&T came back and bought all these companies. You see how big they are now. But nobody brought that up because some people had to get paid in the process to know that AT&T was doing this so they could get all their money and buy up all these other companies and become this company that they are today. And I'm just saying this as far as conspiracy theories go.
Oh, and you know what? When people use the word conspiracy theorist, it's almost as though, it's kind of like Dave Chappelle said when they were calling him crazy after he walked away from $50 million, they said he was crazy. He said, you know, I don't like that term because it's very dismissive. And I think I feel the same way sometimes when people say conspiracy theorists. It's almost as though, you know, those people are crazy or those people don't know. And I'm not saying that what we've heard tonight or what we talked about tonight is right or wrong because we don't have a clue. We just doing this show because, you know, it's one of the most hot things going on now. But at the same time, do we know? Absolutely not.
I want to clear up the crazy comment first. See, I call myself a conspiracy theorist because I read everything. I look at everything. And when everything don't fit, regardless of how you see me, you would know that I'm a logical being, that I have this propensity to gather the knowledge and actually say what I think forth from prison I've come from, so it's not something I just grabbed off the top or something I just grabbed out of nowhere. I think a conspiracy theorist is somebody that took all the information, looked at it analytically, and then decided that this is something that could have happened. I know you won't agree with me, but this is my theory.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually people come around, so I don't think it's a crazy thing or somebody just grabbing something out of the air. I think it's somebody that delved into the information and say, look, nobody's going to agree with me, but you can't change my mind unless you give me some other facts.
Well, you know, when Fox News talks about Alex Jones, they'll always call him a conspiracy theorist. But most of what Alex Jones says on his show, you know, pans out. I mean, like a big percentage, a big chunk. And so, you know, when you call him conspiracy theorist, you know, it's kind of like being dismissive as though, you know, he doesn't have any validity to what he says on the show. In actuality, he says a lot of very interesting things, but that's just, you know.
Exactly. That's what I mean, because, you know, people will see, we use terms so frequently now that we dilute the meaning of those terms.
Yes.
And then we take the dilution of the meaning to mean what we thought the term meant in the first place, and it really didn't. The term didn't change. We just changed our perception of the meaning of the word.
I agree. Christopher, you were saying what?
I was going to say in terms of that, and AJ's analogy of you know, the logicalness and conspiracy and what some people tend to do, some things, it may be in a conspiracy realm, but it's facts that back it up to make it more of what it is to the right versus the left. For instance, Michael Jackson was actually worth more dead to Sony than alive. Most people don't know they had certain types of insurance policy payouts not only went to what he owned in terms of his wealth, but also went to speak to what they would actually get if he died, because he was, it's not just a, like with me and you, we died on a $200,000 insurance policy, whatever we had, and they paid it out. With him, that's like a boxer insuring his fist, because those are legal weapons, but they insure it beyond what most people understand. And so this guy DuPont, he had so much money that even after he committed a rape of a minor, his own daughter, a judge, a sitting judge, because he's in that club. So he didn't even, so you see what I'm saying? I mean, that's not conspiracy. That's fact.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. And you know, what we do on this show each week is we try to bring you very interesting stories. Excuse me. Ones that catch our attention, you know, out of the headlines, and we try to bring you not just what you may hear from mainstream media, but also, excuse me, I'm choking, also what you may not hear. And so tonight that's what we've done with the disappearance of Flight 370. There's a lot of conspiracy theories going around out there, and we're just trying to tell you some of the ones that we've heard. Y'all agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, I agree, but I wanted to add to your Michael Jackson thing is, imagine a black man owning the Beatles. Imagine a black man owning the Beatles. Michael Jackson owned the rights to all the Beatles songs.
Right.
Paul McCartney, all these people performing Michael Jackson songs, even though they wrote them.
Right.
Michael has money that people don't know the type of money that he's still getting royalties from every time they sing these songs, every time they play on the radio. That money goes to Michael Jackson estate or to Sony or whoever wrote up the right contract.
I agree. Y'all, we got about 12 minutes left in the show. Can we hit on this Venezuela situation with the fingerprinting registry? Because, y'all, that scares me. That absolutely scares me. Basically, Venezuela is enforcing a fingerprint registry to buy groceries. That's how crazy it's getting down there. Basically, they said the country of Venezuela has implemented everything from price control to rationing in an effort to control the hyperinflation that they say has gripped the nation. All attempts so far at controlling the demand and hoarding have thus far failed, prompting the government officials, they say, to issue directives requiring biometric verification for the purposes of buying food. That's scary. And so the government is basically, a lot of people feel like the ones that caused the problem, and then, which is leading to the panic, and then they're pointing the blame at the people. Now, everybody knows that we're talking about, we're teetering on the collapse of the dollar. Well, if you really feel like that is true, as I do, then I think stockpiling some food is a good thing. So if the government here decided that they were going to make us, you know, register our fingerprints, I'd have a problem with that, because whenever you start telling people that the country is in trouble and this, that, and the other, that's the natural instinct, is to look out for tomorrow. So that's pretty much what they're doing down there, and they're requiring you basically, if I'm understanding correctly, you got to give your fingerprint and other personal data in exchange for permission to purchase food. Now, what do y'all think of that? Is that scary, or is it just me?
I was reading that story, and what's scary about it, they're actually speaking to poor people. They're not speaking to the rich people. And you're right, they tried the article was talking about how they're instituting this to keep people from hoarding.
Mm.
How are poor people hoarding food?
This is true. They got enough money to hoard food.
Now, my take on it would be that everything that's done first, they actually do it either in the poor communities or in third before it's implemented elsewhere.
Do trial runs? You're saying they do trial runs, AJ?
Yeah. What they do in the military, they actually, all these swine flu and all these flu shots, they test on the military because they're GIs, they're government issues, and no, they can't say anything about the test. So if you're poor, you can't say anything about where everything is coming from. You're just trying to get what you need for sustenance for your daily requirements. So they would test these things out, and they don't really complain or do anything because that's the only way they're going to get what it is. And if it works, then they either recall hundreds of thousands of pounds of beef and turnips and greens and spinach, to where the next time the beef come out, the beef is so high that now they can say that the beef is high because of this, so they can say this drought came and the oranges are this high. You know, so there's ways to manipulate the market and to manipulate whatever the government does by having it tested somewhere else first.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I 100% agree. Christopher, you were weighing in and saying what?
I was saying that I think it's some kind of a testing that they're doing to see how certain things in terms of monitoring, tracking are going to work. And because the article, it wasn't saying that they wanted to do this unilaterally. Basically, it was saying that the rich folk in Venezuela had everything that they needed, but it was the poor people that they were trying to do that. So that just sounds like they're trying to institute something heinously. Because if they
find what
and they're going to spread it.
You know, and I think you got a point. Remember many months ago, I don't remember how many, was it 6 months ago, that the EPT cards here had an issue? Remember? And the people went to the grocery store and the EPT cards either failed or... Remember?
Yeah.
And so somebody was saying this situation is the American version of the EPT card. Well, if that be the case, then are they doing a dry run with poor people across the world where they're doing it in Venezuela and doing it here, trying to see what will happen if they pull, you know, your resources away, or if they, you know, it just seems like something's going on there. You know, I mean, I'm with you, as an oxymoron to say poor people are hoarding food. I mean, seriously? I mean, so it's just something to look at. But what we know, if we're Christians or if we're people who are Bible scholars or just read the Bible speaks of 666 being the mark of the beast. And so we know that per the Bible, there will come a time in which we will have to take the mark in order to buy or sell. And so when I read this story, that just reeked of 666, and I thought, oh, God, I'm not ready to go there. Did that cross y'all's mind at all when y'all read that maybe this is like the beginning of the mark of the beast?
Well, I think there have been trials, like when Europe wanted to make it one currency. That was considered the beginning of the mark of the beast. And then when Italy's economy was failing, they were trying to get out of the currency, and they were trying to change something else. That was considered – So, and then when George Bush was in office, the son, there were some things changing that was considered. So I think there's a lot of things that lead us to believe that way, because I think what happens is when we're fed information, even if we don't believe it, when something looks similar to what they fed us when we didn't believe it at that time, we tend to lean in that direction as though, oh, they are really trying to do this. So I'm really not sure. I'm going to have to take some time to do it, because I think we're constantly fed these strings of information, these strings of data to set in our brains until something clicks and makes that part of the information pertinent. So I'm not for sure what it is, but I do think it's a test. What it's a test of, I'm not sure.
And you know what? And we know it's a test. We just don't know what it's about. I agree. And the thing is, you know, I would tell anybody, even if you're poor, you might just put a can of beans or something away a week, because I do know something is coming. I feel that. It's just what and when, because, you know, we're always hearing of wars and rumors of wars and economic collapses. And so that be the case, we know that eventually, and they're talking about, you know, we saw with GridX 2, drills in which to try to see what would happen if some type of disaster occurred and the grids were knocked out. So all these things, we're getting warnings, which the Bible tells us warning comes before destruction. And so I would say to anybody, you know, a generator couldn't hurt. Some extra water around the house couldn't hurt. Some extra cans of food couldn't hurt. You know, and so I just think that's just, you know, preparing for war in time of peace. Or hoping for the best but preparing for the worst. That's just how I look at that. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. Y'all want to add to any of those stories before we wrap up?
Well, I just want to say the opinions of everybody on this show is not the opinions of Center Stage Radio.
I love that. Hey, I'm so serious.
What we were just talking about, Leslie, people really do need to take it seriously, because it started with Ronald Reagan and it's now going through even with our current president. Just Google the issue with the black farmers in the settlement, but with the white farmers. See how the government is paying farmers not to produce food. And that's because we're importing more than people think that we're actually growing in this country. And just need to keep that in mind, and that's why you do need to really start taking these things seriously.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, I agree. The views and opinions you heard tonight, they were not AJ's. They were not Christopher's, and they were not mine. Nor were they
Sam's.
I want to throw that out there so anybody listening to the show would know that these are not truly the opinions of Center Stage Radio. And we will be here next week with the more opinions.
That's just so true. Listen, tonight, y'all, we were all about other people's opinions. We didn't have none of our own. Okay. But I'm just putting that out there. Listen, tune in each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a church member to check out the show. Also, we'd like to hear from you. Drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Give us show ideas. And, y'all, we've been getting a lot of interesting ones. We don't promise to do them all. We really look into the story, and if we feel it fits in with something that we kind of accustomed to, we'll do it, you know, certain types of stories we just don't do. And so, but we still like to consider anything you like to see us do. So do that. Just either hit me up at Facebook or AJ or Christopher up and tell us your show idea. Definitely. AJ Houston on Facebook, or Christopher Buns on Facebook, or Carrie Hines on Facebook, and we'll definitely look at your show ideas and consider them. Also, y'all, listen. Well, anyway, we don't have even time to go. That's way too long for me to go into. Thank you guys so much tonight for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. Again, the views and opinions of tonight's show were not those of Carrie Hines, for Bud, Jay Houston. We were merely speaking. We were just surfing through YouTube based on what the caller had said and found that video and thought we'd play it for you all tonight. And I absolutely did not get a chance to play the video that I did plan to play, but we'll do that next time. So, okay, until we see you next time, we're signing off for tonight. AJ, Christopher, and Carrie saying good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.